Hi, hello, how are you? Welcome back to the Pennylyn Podcast. I am Krista. I'm the owner, founder, CEO of Pennylyn, and this is our podcast. So each week I'm talking to you guys about the state of affairs of Pennylyn. I try to get a guest on each week as well. This is only the third episode, so I'm still kind of figuring out the kinks, but we're so happy to have you listening along. Let's just kick it off because I am so busy this week. It is actually kind of ruining my life. I feel constantly underwater. It doesn't help that my husband is also out of town this week. So I am solo dolo with my mother and the two boys. And she's been like the biggest, most wonderful help. But I was planning to have more like time for her and me. And instead, it's been like a lot of running around. And I just feel like everything is happening all at once. And it is good. But I don't know that I'm equipped to handle everything happening all at once at this current time. So let's just talk about literally the first thing on my list was a crazy week. So yeah, it's been insane. Everything is happening, which we will get into. So I have been crying a lot, not sleeping as much as I want to, but it feels like it used to be like every 6 months, Pennylyn would kind of go through this like new hump of trying to figure out our new normal. And it would be every 6 months because, you know, we would kind of get to where we wanted to be, move it along, but then something would happen and kind of a growth would happen every like 6 month period. So, you know, twice a year, once a year, once in the middle of a year. I don't know. You're going to have to forgive me. This is going to be a little bit all over the place today, but that 6 months has now turned into every 3 months. And we are like really, really, really feeling the brunt of it. We've been hiring more people like crazy. And it just feels like it's never enough. I brought Dylan on full time. He's like our finance guy, but he's also kind of just like helping consult. And he's kind of working through of like how long it takes to pack an order and how many people we need to pack orders because how many orders we're getting a day. And one of the things we realize is we're literally at max capacity at our e-com location, which is in the back part of the Rowayton store. So we are looking at warehouse spaces. And that we will get to in a second, but that's like a whole other beast. But we're basically at capacity, and instead of averaging like 200 orders a day, which we were able to get around 250, we're now averaging around 350 on like a regular day, not on like a launch day. And that 350, if we're really only be able to get out 250 a day, keeps us constantly behind no matter how hard we try. And then obviously this week and last week we've been splitting people in time with Advent. So like Amanda's over in Westport. The Amandas are over at Westport and they are packing Advents away. My mother was there today helping out and it's going so well. This is the first year that I really haven't had to physically pack my own Advent box, and it is like such a blessing. Also the first year, other than my mom being there today, the first year that my parents haven't had to pack any Advents either. So or do anything for it. So we're getting out around 800 boxes, like 500 24 day and then 300 12 day. So those are going out. It's November 19th as I'm recording this. So we're hoping, like I know like the first few boxes, we're going by different sizes. So depending on what size sweatshirt you bought is depending on when it's going out. So like the extra smalls and I think the 3XLs like went out first because, oh, I did not put my stuff on Do Not Disturb because that was like the lowest size. So like we were able to send out our 3 extra smalls. So I think we're getting into the mediums. And I know the double XL is probably going to go last because that was like the big bulk of sweatshirts. So Amanda's over there doing that. But because we've been like splitting time and people, like we've been really feeling the effects of it. And then as we're feeling the effects of being, you know, however many days behind in packing, we are also getting hit with all of the things we've been ordering. We have been like really bumping up our quantities for accessories, mainly acrylic and bags. And so we've been placing massive orders, like definitely the biggest orders that we've done to date, because we're always constantly out of it. And, you know, you can't sell if you're out of stock. So those unexpectedly, because we weren't tracking them fully, because they get shipped overseas, you don't have tracking on the boat. But when they land and like get scanned in, that's when tracking starts. But that happens 30 to 60 days ago. So we're not like keeping up to date, which now we are, because last Thursday, I think, we got 200 boxes in of acrylic and we don't have room for it. We're at max capacity in our basement. And then today we got 119 boxes of bags. So we are doing that, and I'm trying not to freak out. So those boxes came in today, and I literally told Amanda, because we couldn't fit all of our acrylic, we literally got a storage unit down the road, and I told Amanda today, I was like, hire U-Haul, hire people, and get these bags out. So apologies if you were in our store today from like 10 to 2, they like literally just left. Boxes were completely everywhere, and I was like walking to the front, and I was like, I like looked at Tara. I was like, have you been apologizing for our appearance? And the woman goes, yes, I've been apologized to 3 times now. Thank you. So it was cute. But I just like, I feel so bad. And I just keep thinking like, we need to get out of here. And then like, this won't ever happen again. And like, poor Bennett, he's like our e-commerce task guy. I don't even know what to call him. He doesn't have an official title, but he is the best. Bennett, if you're listening to this, which I know you're not, we love you. He counts and he moves boxes and he is like our inventory extraordinaire, moving stuff up and down the basement. And he got the taste of a good life in Advent World at Westport, and he was able to walk to work. And then all of a sudden we brought him back here and we're just slamming him with boxes. And he's like, I'm tired. I was like, totally. So that is our week. And thankfully, we ended up canceling the Black Friday sale. I'm just going to reiterate that again. We're not going to do anything for Black Friday, Cyber Monday. I originally was going to do maybe like a gift with purchase. But honestly, like if we can't get through what we need to get through, then I like don't feel comfortable getting that out. Because this week, Friday, we're launching Sophie Stitches, her launch. And then we are trying to launch our Nantucket Stroll Village and our Wedgwood set. We have like a 12 day Wedgwood set. I don't know how to explain it. So I'm trying to launch those, but I'm not trying to launch them on Black Friday. So like, I have it in my calendar as launching Monday. And then we get into December, we have the Roller Rabbit launch on Friday the 5th, and then Marie and Maxwell on the 12th. And then that leads us into our sample sale weekend. And then that gets us to cut off. We also have 2 products that we have not officially gotten in yet, but one of them is a needlepoint charm necklace that I'm trying to get out for the holidays. And then the other one is a glass bone ornament that I'm also trying to get out for the holidays. I love to do things last minute. So you're just going to have to like be with me, be supportive. And ideally next year we are much more on top of everything. It's just, you know, every year is different and we are chugging along. And I mean, it's all good things, but it is just, I think, like hitting me all at once, and it is the most overwhelming, and I am just really tired. I don't know how you say it. So yeah, in addition to all of that, we've been hiring a bunch of new people. So 2 new women started this week. We have another one starting on the 1st, I think. There's another Amanda, which doesn't really help my life because there's so many Amandas. We have a new Amanda. And then we also hired 2 social people. So I finally found people for the role I've been looking for a while. One of them is Emma. She's in DC and she is going to be kind of like our marketing social manager. And then we have Adrienne as like our social media, I think, associate is how we've written her down. So they're going to kind of like work in tandem. Emma's going to be remote and then Adrienne is going to be in office and we're going to get it all together. And ideally kind of come out with some kind of, not structure necessarily, because obviously social like works well for us, whatever I'm doing now, but ideally I can kind of like kick that off my plate and we can expand and grow what I'm doing now and only continue to get better instead of not posting for weeks at a time, which I have been known to do. So I am excited about that. But I'm just learning that we need to hire more people. And I think I'm like struggling mentally with like, how do we have this many people, you know, on staff? And how are we like not able to make it work? I feel like people are making it work with a lot less, but I've like been talking to Dylan and I'm like, you know, we just need people in here packing orders. If we have those people, but orders aren't being packed, and it's obviously not to do with like our team, but there's some kind of disconnect. I don't know if we just don't have the space to do it or if we're really just not efficient. So he's actually coming the 1st of December and we're going to train him and then he's going to point out all of our inefficiencies. So I'm honestly really excited about that, but it is definitely going to be interesting and a learning curve. When I talk about all the things happening at once, I found a warehouse space. So we live in a very expensive part of Connecticut. I don't really know how to say that. Rowayton is expensive. Where I live is expensive. Norwalk is not as expensive, but because it is bookended, sandwiched between two expensive areas. This is where all the warehouse is, but warehouse is expensive in this area. So what should normally be like $10 a square foot is like $20 a square foot here. And we are learning that. But we really need a warehouse space. The issue is we have such a wonderful view. I mean, you can't see it now if you're watching this on YouTube because you just see my SHIT on the bottom in a blank wall. But we are on the water and we're waiting. We're next to a market. I mean, the sunlight in here is insane. The view is amazing. And I don't know that I can like ask our employees that we've like hired at Rowayton to be like, hey, come work in a cinder block cell with no natural light. Are you interested? And that's like what all the warehouses are around here. And so I was actually able to find a warehouse, and it was serendipitously because it wasn't like listed online. I love looking at LoopNet, so I know like all of the comps in the area and what's available and what's upcoming and what's now not on the market anymore. So I was looking actually at the old Wusthof Knife Company. We looked at their 45,000 square foot warehouse facility just because we really need like a loading dock and pallets. But obviously that was like way too big. But I wanted to go get in there to be like, is it divisible? And the answer was no. But they had another property and they showed it to me and I was like, I don't really know. But he showed it to me and I was like, oh, actually, this is really nice. So I ended up loving it. We ended up liking the second floor, and then we went back with two more of our employees to show them the space. And he's like, you know, you can like look at the fifth floor. We're like, I don't need the fifth floor. And then Amanda's like, why don't we just like see it? Because we were actually going up all the whole building, all the floors, Wusthof's old office. And he's like, well, let's just go up one more and I'll show you what five looks like. And so we went up there and the view is so much better because you're taller up. You can see water, which is ideal. But then also like the natural light is like exponentially more. And I was like, okay, I'll take five. And it worked out, not really, but like in a way, but that it's cheaper because it's not as finished or ready. But I brought my contractor there yesterday, Paul, if you're listening, I know you're not. I love you. The deep love I have for this man. And he's so funny too. He's like, one, such a wonderful guy, but two, he was talking to, he was like, when we first told him about the space, he's like, you don't need 14,000 square feet, which is the size of it. And I said, Paul, I'm 2 for 2 in signing 5-year leases and outgrowing it within the first year. I said, I don't want to do that anymore. And he's like, okay, I understand. And I was like, you just wait. I was like, this time next year, you're going to be like, okay, you made the good decision, because we like to grow to our space. And so we took him to the space yesterday and he was like, honestly, he's like, you know, I'm not going to doubt you guys because I remember you came into our wait and I remember thinking this is way too much space for you guys. And look at all you've done. So now he's our biggest supporter and he's been helping a ton. So we've gotten there and basically it's just an empty warehouse space with windows all around, which is really nice. But we need to figure out, we need to paint the ceilings. We need to, all of the ductwork and the electricity are there, but none of it is like, there's no outlets and there's no vents. So we need to get quotes on that. I also thought the floor looked really nice, but it's actually just like dust. So that doesn't work for us. So we have to like seal and paint that. And then we need to like put in some offices on one side. I actually have like a little picture here. So this is what the warehouse space looks like. This was the original second floor, but the fifth floor just looks like that without this there. So it's obviously just like a big, long, rectangular thing. And sorry if you're like not on YouTube, you can't see this. But like thinking of putting like a conference room in the corner and then like offices along this like sidewall and like a kitchenette employee area. Over here is our freight elevator, which is very important to me in my life. And then like we're going to keep like acrylic over here. And then ideally in this area is kind of like where all of our packing tables are. We want to hold maybe like 8 packing tables, and we want each packing table to like be its own thing. So like there's a canvas only packing table, there's a threads only packing table, there's a canvas and accessories, there's an acrylic, like that kind of stuff. So we would need a few, and then we just need to kind of figure out like the setup for everything. But anyway, I had a number in mind, and Paul was in there. And granted, I didn't know we had to also do the floors. I didn't know that glass walls costed a lot. And so I was like, give me a number. And he's like, let me think about it. I was like, give me a number. Cause it's like $1 million like to outfit this place. I'm gonna like jump off the building. Like it's not for me. But I was like, if it's in the budget, Della keeps telling me like we can afford it. But it's scary to like hear these numbers and all of everything going on. So I was thinking like low figures. And he basically hit me with like what I was thinking times two, which like isn't the end of the world, but it definitely was like more than I was expecting. So I like reached out to Dylan and I was like, Dylan, big dog. Can I afford it? And he was like, yes. He's like, we can also, he's like, I'll back you up because like you need this warehouse. But he's like, you can afford it on your own. So we're going to do that. Now I just need to go through getting approval. We also haven't even submitted a lease. So when I say we have a warehouse, we don't. But like now everywhere I turn, like these boxes, I'm like, you know, this wouldn't happen at the warehouse, or like hiring extra help because we need to move them. Like wouldn't happen at the warehouse because we don't have stairs. So we are moving to a warehouse. I just sent Paul, the contractor, a loose floor plan so he can get me a more appropriate quote. And that he said that it would take about 3 months once he gets in there. So we're looking, you know, early Q2 probably getting in there. But I mean, I can barely wait. We're maxed. And then on top of that, because I am insane and because my life is insane, we submitted an offer for a second store and it got accepted and we're in lease negotiations. It's insane. And I have shared with our team and I have shared with our collective designers. Don't be like, go hitting them up being like, tell me the deets. But yeah, it's crazy. I need to reach out to the stores in the area because I think it's like a respect thing. I know we reached out to, so I guess this is like a little interesting. When we got the space in our waiting, reached out to the store that was closest to us that we were friends with, giving them a heads up, being like, we're so excited, like gonna be neighbors. It's gonna be awesome. You know, wanted to like tell you first before you heard it anywhere else out of what I thought was kindness and respect. And instead they posted about us moving in and shared it with the world before I was ready to. So and we haven't spoken since. So that really sucked. And to say I like think I have PTSD from that experience would be probably an understatement. So I am worried of reaching out to the other stores. And I try to see it from other people's perspective, but it's not like I'm coming in and therefore the other stores close. Like with Connecticut especially, like we have heard from other people that like they do a tour of Connecticut and they go to all the stores and like we have a store card being like, here are all the stores that you want to visit while you're here. And I think that we've brought more people to the area and I'm definitely much more about like togetherness versus competition. Rising tide lifts all boats. And especially like I think about it and I kind of explain it to my friends or people not in the industry of like, you know, you don't only shop at Nordstrom, you shop at Bloomingdale's, you shop at Target, you shop at Walmart. Like you don't have one place that you go to for every single thing. I don't think anybody does. I also don't think that's the case online. I think people have preferred places, but they'll shop wherever. And I believe that is the case with Needlepoint. So I haven't announced on here. You guys will be the first people to know, but I need to reach out to the store that I'm closest with. I would like to send an email to the other two stores, just letting them know that like we're coming in. But I'm just like afraid of the response and I'm afraid of what they're going to say or if they're going to post about it online before I get the chance to. And it just stinks and it's hurtful. But I also like in a way understand, I don't know, because I think they came from a place of hurt. It was just hard. It was hard losing a friend in the industry and feeling like a villain for doing what was best for the company. So yeah, that just is like a lot off of my chest. This is my little therapy session for today. But we have signed an accepted LOI, which is a letter of intent. And we're actually negotiating the lease currently. I've been back and forth today with our lawyer. So that is very exciting. The hopes with that, we also were there earlier this week, last week. I honestly don't remember the days. My life is a confusing jumble. But we went out to the location and were able to get the contractor to the location. And he was able to like walk us through. Also, we were able to get our interior designers to the location. I'm not going to say if they like took a plane, took a train, took an automobile, but they are not in Connecticut. So it was just a meeting of the minds in a place for all of us. But we saw the space and I didn't realize that like we have to get permits for the space. And so talking to the contractor of like, what's that process look like? You know, is this kind of is a February opening doable? Because we have 4 months free rent, which basically means just like we have that time to set up the space without losing money. And ideally in that third month, I want to be up and running so we can start collecting money before we start having to pay it out. And if we can kind of compare it to like the Penny Lane opening weekend in Rowayton, I think that's kind of like a target sales goal that I want to hit. And I think that would be really helpful in terms of getting us like kickstarted with the much, much higher rent. It's actually double our rent in Rowayton. So yeah, but it is also probably double the size too. It's big. It's really big. I wonder if I have just like an empty, all the papers. Next segment is what's on Krista's desk. I think this is a general, empty one, but the walls more look like this. It's just for those not looking, it's just a long rectangle. So we were in there trying to figure out how much it's going to cost to knock down all the walls and then put in like a cash wrap, bookshelves, and all this stuff like storage. We're going to have to pull a lot of permits, and we don't know what that is like for the location. But the quote that I got for knocking down all the walls and like building other stuff was reasonable. I haven't gotten the quote from the interior designers yet. I'm talking with them tomorrow. So hopefully that will work out. I think I like have a budget in mind, but also I had a budget in mind for the warehouse, and that has also gone out the window. So we will see. Okay, so I think that's like generally the things, the updates. There have been a lot. I'm sorry. I'm like really, really all over the place today. I am just like not in a good mental headspace because I'm so overwhelmed. And when I get like too overwhelmed, I almost like freeze where I'm like, I can't do anything because I have to do so much. And Emily today was like, when's the podcast coming out? And I was like, I don't know. I also, at this very moment, don't have a podcast guest for this week. So I reached out to one friend, and then I have two backups. But it's like, I think inappropriate to ask somebody like day of to be like, hey, can you record a podcast with me? But I do think the two friends that I could reach out to are somewhat available. So ideally, if I don't hear back from the person I texted today, ideally I will record with somebody tomorrow and then hopefully get this to you guys Friday, because else I'm behind. So let's get into what's on Krista's desk. So again, this is like more of a segment for people on the tube, but obviously if you're listening to this in your car, hi, what's up? The first thing is do I not have the other one or this one? 1 second. For Eloise, we tried to get an acrylic option and it didn't really work out. So like this was the first option. It's just a hot pink tray with the Eloise stripes on it. But the hot pink was like a little weird. So we actually like inverted and changed the colors and we did more of this. And so it's a scallop version of the 5-inch tray. Because of how the acrylic is, like you couldn't have the stripes fully. So there has to be like a little split in between. And we just didn't love it enough to go through with it. I'm really particular on what we create and what we don't. So that was the samples got sent in and we were like, no thanks. The next one that it's a project that we're working on for somebody else. So I can't really like give much information, but it's a really cool, really cool project that I am very impressed that these people who were helping came up with. I want to show that we were like, not only will we make this for you, but can we buy it from you? Because it's awesome. Then we also got in our store bags, and this is what they look like. This is a small size. It has like a holographic Penny Lane logo on it. And this is like a watercolor print. We're going to have a print for all of our stores, and this is going to be the Rowayton store. And we got those in. We got a lot. We ordered a lot, but we had to air the first round of bags over. But they sent us 4 boxes. Only one of them was our stuff. So we now have to trade boxes with somebody in like Illinois because we got their boxes. So once these come in, it will be really cute and I will be really excited. It's like a beautiful print. Again, like for my listeners, it's like a light blue background print with like hydrangeas on it. There's a sailboat. There's a ribbon, a stitches bag, a tote bag, a skein, a thread, Penny Lane cards. So it's really beautiful, really cute. I was definitely inspired by Asha. She has like the most amazing, beautiful shopping bags that I was like, this is the vibe. This is what I want. This is what I need. And then what else on my desk? I did finish my Dudley Stevens turtleneck. I did this in Very Velvet. Kind of matches what I'm wearing today, but it is so beautiful. And I am obsessed with Very Velvet, like deeply, deeply, deeply obsessed. And I want to stitch it for everything all the time. We also just launched our Grofiber cloth towels. This was a ask and question from two of our store employees being like, every time I wear my glasses, I can't see, and it'd be really great to have one of these. So we did that. We also just launched these small stitches bags. This was our very first sample of it, the one I've been using in my bag. So it had a different clip and a much bigger pull, but this is what we fixed. Oh, and this is like the scissor case. I think I don't know if I showed this to you guys, but this is the Pennyland print on it. So I think I talked about this, but didn't say what it was last week. So that's still on my desk. And then I also have just like a bunch of floor plans, like all the floor plans. And here's another floor plan. And then we also today in our 120 boxes that we got in a ton of project bags, basically like all of our restock of project bags. So we have like the large stitches in pink, green, light blue, cream. We have the needlepoint clear project bags in medium, large, mini, extra large. We have the navy stitches. We have the paisley in the gingham. We have the ribbon trellis in blue. We have the Emma large stripe in pink and blue. We have all the pink PVCs. We have all the PVC project bags. So we just got like a ton of stuff in, and now we get to count like probably 10,000 bags. So, oh, and then the most exciting thing is a tin case came in today for our Roller Rabbit collaboration. So Caitlin, our designer, created like a Roller Rabbit needlepoint print that we are deeply obsessed with. So it has like a little monkey stitching and then like a little, our little thread basket and their hearts and scissors. So excited about this. It turned out so cute. I think our tins are like so cute. I was actually talking to somebody about this the other day that I know that there are other people who have created these. And it's not to say that I invented a tin case, but these weren't there before us. Because a customer of ours, I used to do this thing where I was like, let me design your dream product. And she had an Altoids tin and she was like, I want you to make this big enough to fit my scissors. And so I did that. These are actually, this exact size was custom designed by me, the width, the height, and the length to fit a large pair of crane scissors. And so we originally came out with these just tins, but somebody after like 2 years of making these tins, they were like, please put a magnet on the back of it so your scissors can stay in there without falling out. And I was like, brilliant beyond brilliant idea. And so when I say that no one else has these or shouldn't have these because we did create it, it's because our customers created it. So I'm not like saying like I did this, but our customers did. So just to let you know, I don't get annoyed about a lot of stuff because that is just like the way of business. And like if somebody has what we're already making, same color, like it is what it is. But when it comes to things that we have like very seriously designed and created and developed and perfected, and then somebody comes along and rips that off, that's when I start to get like a little, please don't. So just like a little plug for our tin case, because these are the freaking best. And I keep everything in here. It's the best because honestly, what I do is I just drop a bunch of needles in here, but I also keep my Snag Nabbit in here because I feel like there's not like a good case to carry your Snag Nabbit in because it's really long. But then I just put my scissors in here and this is like my orts, my little ort bowl for when I travel. It's just the perfect thing to throw in your bag. So that is what is on my desk today. And this is where I would introduce our next guest and kind of tell you the background and summary of our call and our talk together, but I don't have anybody. So this might just be the quickest podcast ever, or we could be hearing from somebody great in just a few seconds. So hopefully it's the latter and I'll talk to you soon. But if not, I'll see you guys next week. Bye. We have Emma from What's the Stitch, and I'm so excited to have you on. Thank you for replying last minute to my text because I was like, hey, do you by chance want to record in like 3 hours today? And you were like, yes. So I really appreciate you.
My God, no, I am honored. Thank you so much for having me on. When I heard you were starting podcasts, I was like, oh my God, this is about to be my new favorite thing. So very excited.
I remember like telling somebody a while ago that I want to start a podcast. And I think it was like a guy who like does podcasts or podcast producing. And he's like, you want to talk about needlepoint for an hour every day? And people are going to listen to it. And I was like, it's a big deal. People would love it. And the response has been great so far. So I am very happy about that.
And I was a huge fan of the TikTok like updates, of the board updates. And I was like, this is shareholder.
The shareholder meetings.
Okay. And I was like, this is the best thing ever that now it's like in a formalized setting.
Well, coming from the queen of TikTok, I do appreciate that.
Oh, stop.
I feel like I started being friends with you online, online, because you were like posting. Obviously, you were in Nantucket. You were a Nantucket girly. You were Nita Pointing. And I was like, who's this girl? I want to be her friend. Was it this summer or was it last summer that I like met you officially on a plane?
2 summers ago. Yes. Because I was talking about it with some guy sitting next to me who was like asking me about my life story. I was like, the guy liked to chat and you overheard and you were like, oh my God, I know you. And I was like, no,
literally.
Penny Lane.
I heard you talking about Nita Point and I was like, anytime anyone's ever Nita Pointing on a plane, I'm like, hi, like, do you Nita Point? Do you know Penny Lane? Like, I own Penny Lane. Most of the time, usually everyone's like, oh my God, I love Penny Lane. It is weird when somebody's like, yeah, I need a point, but I've never heard of you.
You're like, that's fine.
It's cool. You can check me out. But I remember you were like Nita Pointing and I remember seeing you Nita Pointing maybe in the lounge or something, or, and then you were talking about it on the plane, and my husband, to set the picture, you are in the window, like, and the row behind us on the other side, and I'm in the window, one up and one over. My husband's on the aisle and you're talking and I'm like, I know her. And I literally like pull over my husband and I'm like, hi, I'm Krista from Penny Lane. And you were like, okay. No, like you were obviously so kind and nice, but it was just, I literally was like, not to eavesdrop here, but like, I'm going to insert myself. And I was like, it's so nice to meet you, Emma. And you obviously were really kind, but it was just like, and that flight is like 30 minutes long. And you just never know, like, what it's going to be like introducing yourself to people you meet online. But you were having your own conversation. I was like, Nita Point?
Yeah, hello? No, Nita Point.
I'm just going to interject, but
it was
so funny. And then I feel like we have just kind of, like, kept up. Obviously, we text here and there.
Yes.
I follow you on TikTok, as we all do, and following along your journey. We were just talking about before we started recording, I, like, work with your aunt. She lives out in Westport. She, like, runs Splash of Pink, which is Lily Pulitzer's signature store.
Yes.
And so it's, like, I feel like we are very connected, even though we've only met, like, three times.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're kindred spirits, right?
Yes. No, I feel like there's been a lot more overlap than like the in-person things of just kind of seeing each other on obviously social media all the time. But it's always good. If Needlepoint has taught me one thing, it's that like you can have a full-on, like full-blown community of people online that you're friends with. And then when you see them in real life, it's like the best thing ever. It's like, oh my God, you're in person. Like,
right.
No, best thing ever.
That is kind of like our background, but I want to hear about your background. I don't know if you've like officially shared with the world. Obviously, I think like on some TikToks here and there, but I don't know if I'm like your first Needlepoint podcast, but
yes.
I would love to hear about where you went to school,
yeah,
your corporate job, and kind of like give me like the TLDR
for
the past few years.
Yeah. So I'm 25. I went to Dartmouth. I played squash there. So I
did not know that.
Really? Oh, yeah. So
yes.
I played, we used to call ourselves knockoff D1 athletes because we were like on the squash team and like technically it's D1, but like it's squash. So
right.
We had the best team ever. I played there for 4 years. Like they're still like my best friends. And that's how I ended up there, but majored in government and psychology and used those 2 degrees to go into investment banking. So
yeah.
I did that for a couple years in New York. And that's why I came to New York like right after college. And I worked on the mergers and acquisitions team and did a bunch of modeling and all of that fun stuff. But had like a job lined up to go into private equity after banking and totally had like, I call it the quarter life crisis, but I was like 23 and I was like, I can't do this. And it's not because, I don't know, I was kind of just rethinking everything and what I wanted out of life and where I wanted to take it. And I was kind of like, you know what? I'm young. If I'm going to take a risk, I'll take a risk now. So I quit banking. I went to work for a startup and that was the potato chip company, Nantucket Crisps. Had a great summer with them. Got to kind of see the behind the scenes of what it takes to run a small business. And I was really intrigued by it. And it was never really something that I thought I saw myself doing or kind of falling into. If anything, I was like, oh, if I go small, I'll do venture or work with like up and coming companies. But I was never like, I'm going to start the company. That was like never really on my radar. But I started tossing the idea out with my family, and they were like, you know what? This has been a dream of my family for a while, but we had always wanted to start a cocktail company. So my two sisters and I, we were like, yeah, we're going to try and put our heads together and start the company. And that's still like going on in the background, but the
yes, it's on my list of notes to ask you about.
it's still going slowly but surely. There's a lot of legal stuff in the background that I honestly was, I mean, rightfully so, it's alcohol, but that kind of took longer than anticipated. But I was kind of like, all right, if I am gonna start this company, I need to be able to sell it and put myself out there and document the journey. And that's why I started posting. I am not really a very public person. So this is like, if you told me I would be like on Instagram like 2 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. I started posting, and then I just started posting about Needlepoint and how I wanted to keep it affordable for myself because I didn't have like a steady income coming in and was just going off savings. And I started like painting my own and with paint pens and doing my own thing, and eventually started on Etsy, and it's kind of taken on this life of its own. It's been like the most incredible journey so far. It's been about a year, and I've just had the time of my life with it. It's so fun getting to run your own company. I mean, obviously, you know it, but I've definitely loved the being an entrepreneur, and kind of every day is new and you never know what's coming next, and you can kind of shape your own destiny, which is fun.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, a few questions. Did you get a scholarship for squash? Sorry, I'm like still on
squash.
I did
not. So
okay. But you were recruited to Dartmouth for squash?
Yes.
And like, were you playing squash in high school?
Yeah.
Okay, because like the only time I know of squash is like at like a gym.
Yeah.
So squash, I can't imagine somebody's like—
incredibly niche. But the high school I went to was like really big into squash in Connecticut. Like,
so random.
Yeah. And how I got into it is I was like 10 or 11 and I was not an athletic kid. For example, I quit soccer when I was little because I didn't like to sweat. That was the example I gave. I was like, no, not for me. I don't like sweating.
Yeah.
But my mom was like, do you want to sign up for this clinic? Like, and this kid I had a crush on was in the clinic. I was like, yeah, sure, done. And I
always relates back to boys.
Yeah, I was like 9 or 10 or somewhere in that range, and then I just fell in love with the sport, like totally loved it. I'm a very like competitive person and loved the individual nature of the sport, and I wasn't letting anyone down but myself if it didn't go well. I played throughout high school and ended up at Dartmouth.
That's so random. What did you think in college you were going to do with your government degree? Like, were you all like not planning, I'm assumed, to like, nobody like dreams. I mean, maybe somebody does now, to like go to like JP Morgan one day. But like, obviously that wasn't
your goal.
That's
where I ended
up. Right.
Honestly, we didn't have like a finance degree at Dartmouth. I was always told just do what you love in college if you go to a liberal arts school, because you're never going to get a degree that's directly applicable to something that you want to do. And I always saw myself going into finance, was kind of like, yeah, of course, I'm going to do this whole path, and never really explored any other career path, which is totally stupid looking back on it. And that's kind of why I had this like big change up when I was 23 and what I wanted to do, and really what was out there. Yeah, government, it was always kind of like I had a real interest in it. I never really thought I was going to go into policy, or it was just something that always fascinated me. So I studied that in psychology and then took my talents to New York for banking, which is totally not the same.
Right. Not at all, but I love it.
No.
Okay. And so you put in your time. I feel like, honestly, like the more I've grown up and the more I know, I feel like everyone kind of goes to JP Morgan to like get to the next step. It's kind of like we put in your time and that like opens a bunch of doors and it looks really good on a resume. I don't think people are like, I want to be the next Jamie Dimon, even though maybe some people like do it. That couldn't be me. So you went into Nantucket, Chris. My first question is, how did you get into that world? Like, is it because you're from Nantucket or what? And then my second question is, why didn't you stay with them?
So I started there with a cold email. Was like, I knew I wanted to take some time off because I started my job right out of college, like 5 days after I graduated. So I didn't really get any time off. So I was like, I want to take a little bit of time off while I'm like looking for jobs. So I was like, you know what? This would be just be like the coolest thing ever if I could be in Nantucket and work with them. And I was kind of like, let me shoot my shot. So right. They have this fantastic jingle. It plays on their website when you're like browsing. So I sent them a cold email, but I was like, I love your jingle. And it was the coolest thing ever. And they very nicely responded. We met up. It was great. I was like very high level, just kind of observing, more like shadowing. And I helped them with like tracking down people who owed them money and like just doing like random tasks. I did events. I actually hosted a Sip and Stitch in their,
yes.
They called it the Pink Room.
It was just so cute.
It was
so
cute.
Instagrammable.
And so we had a little event there. And I don't know, like for me, I was there based out of Boston. And I was kind of like, all right, I did the summer. I want to try to like go out on my own and see what that kind of holds. So I was never... I don't know. It was always going to just kind of be like an internship thing.
Okay.
And it was great. I mean, it was so fun getting to see like the behind the scenes of what it takes. And Hayden, the founder, is like so incredible. And he's done such a good job with it. So getting to see like where they've taken the company since then, it's crazy.
At what point was it at JP Morgan or is it Nantucket Crisp that you decided to start your drink company with your sisters?
It was probably that summer. Where I was kind of like, oh, I'm working at this startup, but like, let me try to like ideate on what this could look like. That's kind of how we stumbled across it. The whole gist of the company is that if I'm going to my friend's house or I'm going to a birthday party and I don't want to just bring like a pack of High Noons or a White Claw, you want something a little more elevated, actual cocktail, not like the 6% or the 4%. So our cocktails are 18%, 2 servings per bottle. Yeah.
That would put me underneath the table.
Yeah. 100 calories a serving. So we wanted to make like a clean, single serve, nice, elevated experience around it. That's kind of the gist of it. So they'll be in 4-packs and yeah, you'll be able to like bring them to your friends and kind of just elevate the little moments in life.
And so you have 2 other sisters. Is the company still called Tria?
It's called Lately.
Lately. Okay.
Yes.
So I remember like following on TikTok and we're like, we're going to like start this up and we have names for this, but this was trademarked. And we have another name for this. And it was really interesting to like, because I'm obviously creating like a CPG brand and especially when it involves alcohol, it sounds like nothing I ever want to be a part of. So I'm like so proud of you for like trying to even delve into that world. But do your sisters, are they entrepreneurs too? Or do they have full-time jobs? Are they like still involved? Are you kind of like leading this?
They are still involved. We kind of are spearheading it. It honestly, like now that I've got this, it's probably going to fall more to them than it was to me, which is a weird kind of like shift. My youngest sister, Annabelle, is in social work school and she's going to be a social worker. And my other sister is a personal assistant. So we're all kind of doing our own thing, but we come together on this one project, which is fun to kind of get to work together.
And which sister, one just got married, and which sister helps you in the office?
So the one who helps me in the office is the one at social work school. She's in New York, so she's local, and she's been so nice to help me out. It's kind of like a beneficial relationship. Like, I pay her, and she gets, like, your money on the side because she's a student. So that's good. And then the other one just got married, who's in a personal assistant.
Beautiful. It was a gorgeous wedding. I follow you on Instagram, so I've been like following
along. It was awesome. It was so much fun.
So when did you like first pick up needlepointing, or how did you get into needlepointing? Is it something you've always been doing?
So I actually did a project when I was like 8, and I finished it into a pillow, and I was so frustrated about how long it took to get the pillow back that I never did another project. That was it. I did my one pillow and I was done. Then when I was in banking, my roommates and I were literally just desperate for a hobby or something that we could do just for ourselves that had no consequence and it wasn't scrolling. And it was just like a little thing that brought us joy. And we stumbled into Eric Wilson in Nantucket and picked up our first canvases. And then on the ferry ride home, we all got started. The time the next weekend rolled around, like we were already done with our canvases. We were like, how do we get more? And we were addicted. And to this day, my 2 friends are still like the only ones of my 2 friends who needlepoint. So they're like, I go to them first with all of like my ideas and they get to come raid all of the stuff that's in a pile for a studio sale one day. Like they get first dibs on everything. But that's how I started. But my grandma also needlepointed and needlepoints her whole life. So it's been a fun little thing that we get to share together like a little passion.
I love that. And so did Erica Wilson like teach you or refresh your like memory? Like, did you like learn online or how did you like physically learn how to stitch?
I learned online, honestly, probably with Penny Lin videos. I remember just going on YouTube. And just being like, how do I do this? And then I was like, it can't be that hard. And then I remember trying to get into it and I'm like, oh, this is, I was just confusing myself. And then I was like, how do you, but like, once you know the one stitch, then you're good to go. And then it became like a, let me teach my roommates like this new stitch I learned, or it, we all just started teaching each other like the fun things we picked up throughout.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cute. Okay. And so how, again, did you transition from needlepointing into designing, but then also into like, I know you start with customs. So I want to get into customs before we like get into like your Etsy. But what was the transition like for that first phase?
So I started teaching myself how to paint the canvases and like transfer charts onto the canvas. And I was like, okay, this is great. And then I started designing my own just with sayings. Like my favorite project to this day is a funny saying pillow. So like there's a bunch behind me, but like that's a lot of what I take joy in is like the funny pillow that they don't go together, like a needlepoint, which is traditionally like such a buttoned up hobby, and then you just smack like something funny on there and it's just like it doesn't make sense, but for some reason it does. So it started out with like a lot of sayings, like the, I think it's right there, do no harm and take no shit was like my first one, and I painted it with paint pens and then stitched it, and yeah, that was like the finished product right there. Then was like, okay, like I'm doing all these things. People seem to like the designs on social media when I was sharing it. So I was like, oh, I'll sell the digital charts. And that kind of like went to Etsy. And then I was like, well, I can actually, if people don't want to do the digital charts because it takes time to paint them and whatnot, I have time. So I can paint them for them. That's kind of how the Etsy started. Very spur of the moment. Was kind of just like throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticked at that point. Then I started doing customs for people, which I love because they're so meaningful and taking people's like favorite pieces. I've done a lot of custom houses and dogs and pets and like wedding signs. And
are you on Stitchly or Maxstitch or what? How do you design?
I use Stitchly.
Okay. And so you just like picked it up one day, was like, I can do this, or like, do you like do any kind of resources? How hard can it be?
I have a very like, how hard can it be mentality, for better or for worse. So I'm always like trying stuff and trying to teach myself. And like, obviously you make mistakes and then you try to fix them, come back better. But I have a very, I can do that mentality. So this whole thing, like when I started learning how to self-finish things, it was like, oh, I can do that. How hard can it be? And it's really hard.
A little hard.
And it's really hard.
This is like definitely one of like the bigger questions I would be really interested in, and kind of why I wanted to like have you on. In addition to all the viral success that you've had, is I would love to kind of talk to somebody who is a new designer in today's age. I don't really know even how to say it, but I guess I'll preface it by saying when I started designing, people weren't really, I don't know, online. I feel like needlepoint was still kind of in the ether, very much like in person. And I think had I started needlepointing or started designing today in the world that we live in the needlepoint realm, I would have been scared shitless. There is like a lot of constant feedback. There's a lot of negative talk. There's a lot of expectations, warranted or unwarranted. And I would love just kind of your perspective as a new designer, for as much as you're comfortable sharing, of like kind of what is that transition been like? Because I think a lot of new designers get a lot of slack. Like I remember the flack I was getting was a lot from stores because we were selling direct. I feel like that glass ceiling has been pushed through. But now there's a different level of gatekeeping where it's not that you can't sell direct, it's now that you can't be a designer because you haven't been doing this for 100 years and you don't know what you're doing and you didn't go to art school. Like, I feel like there's a lot of really weird rules that like people are choosing to implement here and there. And I always think, God forbid, if I had done what I had done to like in 2025, people would hang me by the rafters. Like they would, it would just like wouldn't, it wouldn't work.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on this. I think for better or for worse, I had no clue what I was getting into. And I didn't really know that there was kind of like a subculture of like with needlepoint being like having that kind of rap of like it could be gatekeepy because everyone I had ever met was so incredible. And I was like, yeah, why not try? I didn't realize there were all these like the rules, unspoken or not. And like, obviously, you learn so much by just doing and people should be given grace for that. But like, because you live and you learn. But yeah, I don't have any formal art degree, but I think that what I try to kind of center myself around, the things that I make me happy and make me laugh. And if it makes one other person laugh or have a smile on their face or they get a kick out of it or like they think it's cute, like then I've done my job. You create it, you put it out into the world. How the world reacts is out of your hands. In no other area of life or in art or business is someone necessarily just criticized for starting. So I'm kind of like, you have to start somewhere, and good for you for like knowing that there could be backlash and doing it anyway. The only way you get better is like innovation and competition, like in the marketplace. It's like a rising tide lifts all boats, especially with something as niche as needlepoint. Like the more people are talking about it, the more people are creating and designing and innovating, the better, the more the market grows and the more people get into it. And like, isn't that the point all along? Kind of like go nuts.
Has there ever been anything that people have said directly or indirectly that you're like, oh shit, like maybe this isn't for me? Or is it like, have always been like super confident?
No, big time.
Okay.
There has definitely been indirect things. I'm kind of like, I just try not to look at things because I'm like, what's the point? You're never gonna please everyone first. Yeah. And then the desire shouldn't be to please everyone, if that makes sense. But definitely, especially in the beginning where it's like you don't know you're doing things wrong necessarily.
Right. Because there's no rule book. Nobody tells you.
Exactly. And like for better or for worse, you make mistakes and all you can do is learn from it. Nobody's perfect. You just try to go with grace and like figure it out and correct the mistakes. And like if you've got an unhappy customer, you make it right. Having a business has taught me a lot about all of that. And like obviously at the end of the day, you just want people to have a nice, pleasant experience with your brand and your business and the designs you make. As long as the intention always comes from a good place, I feel like keeping that as like the North Star and just like trying to be a good person, then it's like there's always going to be chatter, but you can't really do anything about that. I don't know. That's the mentality I've tried to take, but like,
well, that's
it's
good.
Not fun.
No. And I mean, somebody who is like, who's been doing this for, 5 years, not like a ton longer than you, but like
a lot
somebody
longer.
Who, like, it's just like, I'm a little bit more established, a little bit, you know, ahead of
time.
Like, I feel like the craziness of the industry over the past few years. And I still get a lot of feedback, criticism, you know? And so I do feel like I'm in a better place, whether that's from my blogging background or just because I've been doing this long enough. It doesn't really like get to me, but I just can't imagine dealing with all of that and being a brand new designer. I always think about not having the background either in blogging or just being needlepointer, how I would deal with the criticism on top of being afraid, getting into a new space, starting something new. And I have a lot of like empathy for these new people because I do feel like they're kind of held to a different standard. I feel like they are required to be absolutely perfect and there's no grace period. If I were in their shoes, then I'd be afraid to continue on or be like, actually, this isn't for me and I don't want this kind of negativity. And there are so many new designers, so many new stores. The industry is growing. And you know, if you look at it from like a big picture perspective, it is great for everyone involved. But if you really like look at it through a microscope that these people are kind of viewing it as, it's like it's the worst thing that's ever happened to them. But one, I'm really impressed with what you're doing because you've kind of have had criticism. You've had, you know, that kind of pushback and you've not only not listen to it, not let it affect you, but you've succeeded. And I feel like in my mind, I look at you as kind of like one of the breakout designers that like from this like big group of people of like kind of established themselves. And you're kind of like, I'm here and it is what it is. And like, it's going to figure out. But I guess like, do you have advice for new people who are, you know, kind of feeling that uneasiness or that fear? And like, do I continue on? Do I not? I mean, my advice is just fucking do it. And like,
yeah,
it is what
literally,
it is. But like,
I was like, I don't know if I can curse on this, but I was like, just keep fucking going.
So it's like, but it's like so hard because it come from like a different, it's so stupid to even like a different generation. But like really there was a pushback from stores, but it was all behind the scenes. And now the pushback is from everyone. And it's like very public.
And it's like faceless people. And
yeah,
that is the part that I struggled with. But I don't know. It's kind of like if I had one piece of advice, it's literally just keep going. If you're doing something worth doing, not everyone's going to like it. And not everyone's going to like anything, and that can't be your motivating factor. I would say this whole endeavor has given me some thicker skin, which is good. I just try not to give it any attention. Obviously, things like do get to you, and I would say keep going. And like, I was very naive when I started, and I had no clue that Same. That was even a thing. Like, I didn't.
Yeah.
I was like, it's needlepoint. It's a hot, like, and in all of this, I try to remind myself that it's a hobby and it's supposed to be for fun. And like, how lucky are we that we get a community of people that we can bond over this with? And I try to bring it back to that and not the negativity sometimes. But at the end of the day, it's a hobby. So I'm kind of like, it should bring joy.
You think it really puts it in perspective when you try and tell somebody what's going on who's not in the needlepoint world, like trying to tell like my father
knows all of it.
Right. But like you try to explain it to them and you're like, okay, so there's this 75-year-old lady who's like talking shit about me online. They're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, so they just don't like that I exist. You say it out loud and you're like, oh my God, like this is
it sounds insane.
Insane. Like, one, this shouldn't be happening. And two, like, what did I get myself into? I was the exact same way. I was so, so naive. And like, honestly, like, there's so many times where like things happen and I'm like, if I had just known, I would have never done this. Like, thank God I did. And like, I am happy. And like, it obviously it all worked out. But I just was like, there were some like, dark days. And it was just so rough. And you're just trying to do what makes you happy. And every single time somebody's like, no, 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 no. And you're just like, oh my God. And it's like people who aren't in your day-to-day life and don't have anything to do with you or any part of your business. And they're just like telling you what to do. I think like, especially early on, it was very hush. It was very behind the scenes, lots of like spurs, gossips, rumor mill. And now in a for good and for worse way, it's all online for everyone to see. And my biggest advice is don't read it. Don't be part of it. And a lot of people do reach out to me because I think I might be like the matriarch of being talked about online. But they're always like, how do you deal with it? And I was like, don't read it. Like, don't even like be a part of it. Don't be like, even if you're like a reader or a spectator, like if you're a commenter, just don't.
Yeah. I had to learn that lesson.
Yeah. It's not easy. It might be fun to like read about other people. But like once you see your name in the big lights, you're like, oh, shit. And so like that kind of puts like everything in perspective. You're like, actually, this really sucks. And imagine how it feels for like, all the people that I read about before. Yeah. I want to talk about something else that could be horribly toxic, but going viral on TikTok. I've done that once or twice before. That can also be a really scary place from people who have no idea what's going on. I feel like everybody, their dream is to go viral and that's all they want. But there's a lot of really weirdness that comes with going viral, especially on TikTok. But let's dive into the virality of your Fendi bag. So like, I feel like you were really good and really consistent about like posting every day. You're like, hi, I'm Emma. Like, I'm a needlepoint designer and this is what we're doing today. And I loved it. And like, you're Gen Z, right? Like officially?
Yes.
Are you cusp?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm 25.
I don't know.
So whatever.
I don't know what that means. So like, I think so.
Gen Z? I'm definitely not. A millennial.
Not a loser millennial.
Like, no. I think never.
And you were like posting consistently. I remember when you got like 10,000 followers, you were like, my life goal has been achieved.
Yeah,
in, like,
literally.
Just a few months. Yeah. And it was like so exciting. But then you decided to buy a bag. And when I say like it's gone viral, like people in my life are like, oh, have you seen this girl? And I'm like, guys, I've known Emma
Fendi needlepoint
since before
girl.
She, yeah, like before she was famous. And like, I was on a call with actual like major licensor. I want to say it was like maybe Smucker's. And they're like, well, needlepoint's having such a moment right now with that bag. And I was like, listen, lady, I was like, it was popular before then, but that's my friend Emma. So let's talk about you buying the bag.
Yeah.
You posted about the bag and then like what happened immediately after. Because I think it was like the very first video.
It was the first video.
Okay, so give us the full rundown. So, where do you even find the bag?
So it was in July, and another creator made a video about this, her finds on The Real Real. And she was like, this bag would be so sick. Imagine stitching it, all the stuff. And that video did well in and of itself. And my sister sends it to me. She stumbled across it. She was like, you need to buy this. And I was like, are you sure? Like, that is a really big investment for like a bag. She's like, no, you need to do it. I mean, you need to do it. And I was like, okay, this could be the best or worst $3,000 I've ever spent. It was like expensive. And I bought the bag and I knew it was going to be good from the second I bought it because I commented in all caps on that video, I got the bag. And I got like 2,000 followers off that comment. Oh. And I was like, oh, like people actually want to see this. I had like for the week it took to get delivered, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just did that. Like that is a huge investment. But I was like, it'll be good branding, like marketing, whatever. I knew I wanted to do the bag and like with cherries and all that stuff. And then the bag arrives and I start it. And the first video just blew up. I was like, oh my God. And the majority of the people were very like excited about it and thought it was so sick. There was a subsect that was like, this is so stupid. Why would anybody ever pay this much money? I'm like, I'm thinking the same thing. I don't know why I did it. But like,
But here we are.
Yeah, here we are. But then it's funny because people in the comments start going after those people and being like, you clearly don't get it. Like, you're not a craft person. Like,
no, that's TikTok for you. Yeah. It's like everything you do, somebody's going to have an opinion. And then like the comments of the warrior comments being like, don't be mean to her. I love it.
Yeah. So the people that got it. And they really like, they really just got behind it and the whole journey. And it was like a 2-month-ish series and it took so long to stitch.
No,
and
literally.
I would literally like be, there was this one guy in my comments, I forget his name, but he was always like, get this girl some coffee and an Adderall because like, I want an update. And I was like, I can't work faster than this.
Stitching is like not a quick, easy thing to do. And there's so much bag.
So much bag. Yeah, they think it's quick.
I've never seen anyone finish a bag. And that's how I know, even people who are in needlepoint, that's such a big commitment. Yeah. And it's like, so people were like, they're like, Emma, where's the bag? And I remember seeing other videos being like, who's watching the girl with the bag? And I was like,
it was fun. Seeing those videos was the craziest thing. I'm like, oh my God, they're talking about me.
No, literally. And I was like, Emma.
And I would comment, they're like, oh my God, like right side of TikTok, like it to your algorithm. I was like, oh my gosh. But yeah, people loved it. I loved doing it. It was like the most crazy ride. It's currently with the finisher. I'm getting it lined with leather.
Okay. So how long did it take you from start to finish actually?
I started mid-July and then I ended end of September.
That's quick. And you stitched it with silk and ivory?
Yes.
Okay, all in silk and ivory and pepper pot. And people had a lot of opinions about everything, especially I have like one of my very, very good friends was like, she's like, I know you know Emma, tell her not to put the monogram on the front. They're like, tell her to rip it out. And I'm like, guys, I was like, let her be.
Was like, there were two very distinct camps. And my dad was like, I love the monogram. I'm like, oh, no, I have to keep it. I ended up taking it out. But
I know.
Unprompted, we were just like, because I lived with my parents for the summer. And he was like, you know, like, I know everyone. Like, this is my dad who literally calls it knitting. Like, he's like,
he doesn't know.
Early on, he was like, oh, now he knows. But early on, he was like, oh, you're knitting. I was like, not quite. But comes from a good place. But he, unprompted, was like, I really love the monogram. And I was like, thanks, Dad. Like, that's so nice.
Well, everyone else on TikTok hates it. So,
hates it, so it's got to go. But it was fun. I mean, that was the biggest debate. People like debated the background color and the this and the that. And I don't know. Everyone had opinions on everything. I had this one woman who kept saying how the F's on the side were like ruining the whole bag and what a mistake I made putting them in there. And I was like, sorry. Like,
yeah, it's like, okay, Shelly, like, let me live.
Sorry. It was just funny because then, like, the people who loved them, I was like, it's a fanny bag, I need the F's. And the people who loved it would, like, go after her in the comments, like, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it, like, stuff like that. And I was like, oh, thanks, guys. It was the best experience ever. And I'm very thankful my sister sent it my way because it was just, like, such an incredible experience.
Right. And it's almost like sparked this huge like revolution of it because one, and I texted you this, that Fendi actually brought the bag back.
They did.
And yeah, so it's no longer something that you just like, find on resale. They brought it back. But then also I've seen a lot of other craft people like make fake Fendi bags. So it's they kind of construct the bag or you can buy the construction pieces and they're like, make your own Fendi bag. And I think that's really interesting because that is definitely like that one shows your success to not only hit the brand itself, but then to have almost like dupes of your designer thing because you repopularized this bag.
Yeah, it was crazy seeing all the dupes. And I'm like, I mean, go nuts. Like, if it was an incredibly expensive bag. And like, you really can make bags yourself if you like have the mesh and stuff like that. But the kit, I mean, the kit is so special. Like getting that and getting to work on it from start to finish was incredible. And they give you the thread and like, it's, I mean, for me, it was definitely like a once in a lifetime purchase, splurge on myself. So, I mean, yeah, but it's back.
Has the Real Real or Fendi slid into your DMs being like, thanks for doing this?
Maybe.
I love that.
But yeah, I did a partnership with the Real Real on the final bag reveal and then doing another when it's lined. So
they
have been
so
great.
Let's talk about the lining too, because you reached out to us to see if we knew anybody. We like reached out to our bag guy, but it's like really hard to finish something that's already finished.
Yes.
And so how did you find somebody to line it, or like where
did
you take it?
So I got a couple recommendations of people in New York City who were just like cobblers, leather professionals. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going to Santana Leather, and they made it seem like it was pretty simple for them because they do it all the time with like revamping actual bags, and they specialize in like luxury bags. And I was like, okay, it's in good hands. But they were like, yeah, we can totally do this. I was like, okay, that sounds great. So ended up not going like the needlepoint finisher route because it is so niche, but apparently it was a pretty easy thing. I mean, I should be getting it back by the end of the year, but yeah, crazy. But I always joke that like I'm going to get like a glass box for it in my office and just put it in there. And then like,
you can't really wear it.
I know, like I'll wear it on special occasions, but it's like, I am terrified. Like, God forbid you spill something on that. Like,
no, literally. Like your lip gloss comes out and it's just like seeping through. That would be like the worst.
Yeah. But
that'd be really bad.
Very excited to see it finished.
Yeah. Is the leather, because I know like as you stitch, this is why we stitch on bars sometimes, like your canvas can get askew because of the nature of the mesh. So the bag was on Penelope canvas, which is much more cottony versus like what we do on. It's much more like like a starch cotton where it's like strong and durable, but yours I think got a little warped, right? Are they able to like fix that like with the leather process to kind of like,
I think so.
Because also the bag itself, like even the, I remember looking and watching the videos, like the Fendi's was like almost like too heavy for like the mesh to hold up.
The mesh isn't very like sturdy at all, but I would say that like once you actually stitch it, it does give it a little more shape. But with the leather, I'm hoping they can just like write it a bit, but if they can, it's kind of like part of the charm. So it's like whatever.
You started this series on TikTok. Did you immediately syndicate it to Instagram, or were you like,
yeah, it was like real time.
Okay.
And it's funny because across the two platforms, there was a completely different reaction to half the things. Like I find my audience on TikTok is a bit younger. So like there were camps, and like they were never like divided, like Instagram likes this, TikTok like this, but like I would say Instagram was a lot more in favor of the monogram than TikTok was, and like seeing those differences was really cool. But it was like at the same time I would just post both of them, which
I love
is
that. Okay, and so how did the virality like affect your business? Like, because obviously you're doing this wonderful thing, but I'm sure it's also hitting a lot of people who don't necessarily needlepoint or want to needlepoint, and they just want to kind of follow along to see what you're needlepointing.
Yeah.
So like, how did that translate to followers, sales, growth, like on the What's the Stitch side of things?
Followers went like insane, especially on Instagram, which was awesome. Just to know that like that many people were tuning in and interested in something that you were doing. So that part was very fun. And like for the, like, I would say for the most part, they've stuck around. So that's cool. It's like now they know like what's the stitch in the business and what I'm trying to do over here. But it was also great for sales just in terms of like people who needlepoint. I mean, that's the thing. It's like of 100% of my followers, like I don't know what percent actually needlepoint. So it's kind of like, you need the skill to actually be able to like have my business be relevant to you. But it was great. I mean, it was beyond my wildest imagination of like what it would have become when I started it and like before I even posted the first video. But it was fun. It was a My mom helped me every single day packing orders. Like, my sisters helped me. Like, it's been a team effort. My boyfriend, I call him employee number one. Like, he's been in the trenches the whole time. So, no, it is. It's been great. Everyone has been so supportive of it.
So I feel like also with you, around the time you finished your bag was also around the time you were like working on your website. It kind of like culminated in this like really big time period. So I know that you've been working on the website for a while, but I would love to know why you originally got on Etsy, why you wanted to move over to Shopify, how it was building your website, and then how the kind of transition has gone from Etsy to Shopify.
So I started toying with the idea of a website in April, and I was like, it's a really big investment, because I wanted to have a team help me with the website, because I was like, if I'm going to do this, I want to set my foundation up right and get something that looks clean and like the way I wanted to kind of show the brand off to the world. And it was so much work on the back end that I had no clue, just like the photographing and all the like product descriptions and the cataloging everything and like just a lot of logistics behind the scenes. So that took a lot longer than I thought. And I was like, well, now I've got all this information and data, but like I need pictures. I need like stuff to put on the website. So I put together like a little photo shoot, and that was great, and like got great like photos from there. And that took time and like the whole lot of coordinating. So it took a lot longer than I thought it would, but it was well worth it, I think, because Shopify has just been great so far. I made the switch like as soon as the website went live. I think the next day I switched the Etsy to just digital downloads. So because it was hard to kind of have both processes going. Like before with Etsy, I used to go through every single shipping label and put a post-it note on what the order was. But now with Shopify, you can print out the invoice. It's like, it's much easier and more seamless. And around the same time, I got this office space. So I was like, okay, I need to set up the office. I had like 10 days to do it. I was like, I'm going to get it as set up as I can. And then I'm going to launch a website, turn off the Etsy, turn on the website. It was like a very frantic end of October, but it was great.
Yeah. And so have you seen the consistent amount of sales even with the switchover? Because like obviously the benefits of Etsy is that like it really does do kind of like the SEO promotion for you. But with that also come like a lot of fees that I feel like people don't really think about. And it's not like
a ton of fees.
It's not as especially like as business friendly. Like any issue transitioning over, or is like people have just, it's been pretty seamless?
So I like was worried at the beginning because I was like, I don't know how many sales I'm actually driving versus what Etsy's driving. And so I was very hesitant in the beginning. But the day the website launched, I had like my worst sales day on Etsy that I've like ever had. And I was like, okay, I'm driving the sales. So that was kind of like the social proof of like, okay, people are looking at the Instagram or the TikTok or like other methods. And it's not like Etsy's platform that's necessarily doing all the heavy lifting, which was reassuring and gave me kind of, because I was going to keep them both up just in the interim. But then I was like, oh, well, what's the point? It'll just complicate the process and there'll be two like different ways to fulfill orders. That's complicated, like all that stuff. So I just switched over. Etsy was so great though, starting out. I love the platform. It just, for me, it was kind of like a, I started as on like kind of a whim. So I was like, I'll just start with this. And then you don't need to like invest in a website and all that stuff. It's like a lower barrier to entry. I thought it was great. Very user-friendly. I think there's like a ton of great stuff on there as well. And it's great. Like if you're just searching for needlepoint, like the SEO, like you can pop up regardless of like how many sales you've had previously. But the website's been great. I don't have, like, my goals for 2026 are, like, paid ads and, like, experimenting with that and really trying to, like, beef out, like, that part of it. Because I've, like, up until now, it's just been, like, I've been trying to do the marketing myself. But it's been great. I really love Shopify.
But what you're doing, like, your marketing, you do a really good job at it, by the way.
Thanks.
I don't know if you're recognizing that. Yeah. I feel like you, obviously, you understand social really well. And you kind of get it, even though it's so weird to be, like, I don't want to like share my life online. That's all you've been doing. You're doing a really good job at it. So it's really interesting because it's like, you know, I'm a younger millennial. So like I kind of grew up with the internet, but like you definitely were like in it and like you kind of understand from a different perspective as like somebody, you know, an older generation would. And I think that is something that we have in common where it's like we kind of understand how to use social media and like what works and how to like tap into that. But I think you've done like a really good job at it. You're very like obviously founder forward facing. You love to like bring us along, which I think is really important. I guess like do you have any advice or tips for people either starting to start their own business or get into needlepoint or like how do you like approach social media and honestly the different platforms? Like are you even on Facebook or is it really just like video, TikTok, Instagram?
It's TikTok and Instagram. I just did a YouTube because I had to like embed it in my website. Yes. So that's like a new thing. But pretty much TikTok and Instagram, both have been great for different reasons. I would say that like if you're starting out, like the cost of entry is embarrassment. And so like when I saw that quote on TikTok and I was like, oh my God, that is so like...
Yeah.
So true, because I remember in the beginning when you're talking to like very few followers, you feel stupid and you just have to keep going because someone's going to like what you have to say. And the biggest influencers ever started with 5 followers. And like you just, I mean, like if you're saying something that's worth listening to, like you'll find your people and like hopefully you resonate with them and like you build your community. But communities start like, it's a process. You're going to feel silly. I know I still feel silly, but it's kind of like what's happening. But
do you have any kind of strategy of like, this is what I'm posting each day? Are you like trying to get like one video out a day or is it around big launches or what is like, or are you just kind of like by the whim?
I'm doing whatever. Honestly, I should have more of a strategy. When I have more time, I try to do like 1 or 2 videos a day. I've been so all over the place like since the website launched that like I'm lucky if I get 1 video out a day. But it's like yesterday we launched like little beginner kits and I was like, oh, I have to make a video on it. So that was kind of like a natural way to get my post in for the day. But at the beginning, I was like 3 to 5 times just like throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. And initially for me, that was like I would show people how I make like little bag charms or signs and like the how-to videos resonated with people. It was a ton of just like throwing stuff at the wall.
And a Fendi bag all of a sudden is like the shining light.
Yeah, it's like that would suck. So it's I don't know. The social media part has been the most unexpected part of everything. But definitely like... I don't know, when you don't have a budget for marketing or ads or anything like that, like you got to do what you got to do and like just trying to get like your hands dirty and like go out there and do it yourself. So
yeah, it's literally like the best form of marketing because people pay. You think about like a Johnson & Johnson, they pay people millions of dollars to create content just for something to share. And it's you are, you know, judge, jury, executioner. You do everything in a small business. And so you see what's working in real time. And I think people always think like just in the same way they think virality is like the key to success. It's like they think, you know, X, Y, and Z is the key to success, whether that's like paid ads or, you know, whatever. But it's really just, I think it's showing up every day and like connecting with your community however they want to be connected with.
Yes.
I think you did a really good job of that.
No, thank you.
Take care.
So do you.
Thank you.
You're like the queen of it. You know,
But something I also want to say that we're excited about on my side, at least for your new site, is that we can now buy wholesale directly. Yeah. So we started carrying your line maybe like 6 months ago. I don't even know when.
I think so.
But I will say that I'm very appreciative that you do a really good job managing your inventory. I don't know if it feels like that, but every time I want to buy like 50 of something, you're like, yeah, here it is. I'm like, thank you so much. Whether that's like unbridled confidence being like, I can sell through 1,000 of these. I feel like that's like a big thing. Just like people in general. I remember when I started out, I was like, I'll buy 10 and like, you know, see how it goes. And then like, obviously as you grow, it gets more and more, but it's such a big risk because you don't know what's going to sell and what's not. But how has the wholesale side of things been going? How are you managing inventory? You also, I feel like get things weirdly quickly and I'm going to need to know your secret.
I try to look out and be like, all right, what I know which ones like sell the best. And obviously there's like the minis are so small, like the volume of those, they go a lot quicker than like the larger ones. But I was always of the mindset early on that I wanted to, if I had like money sitting in inventory, that was better for me in my mind than not having inventory at all. So I, since the beginning, have tried to overorder, and like sometimes I just completely don't get it right, or like there's a design that just sits on the shelf forever. But like if it sits on the shelf forever, then it's like eventually it'll sell through, or I discount it or something, and then I just don't order it again. And
yeah,
like it is money tied. I don't know if that's like proper cash flow management. No. Like I'm
sounds kinda, good to me.
Yeah, I'm like, I'd rather have it and be able to fulfill wholesale orders and like larger orders than not have it and be scrambling or have people wait. So I really, really, really try to like over order instead of under order, which has been scary, especially in the beginning. But now I'm kind of like, all right, do what you think you could sell, like on a very conservative basis, and then like triple it. And like that was kind of like the rule of thumb, like in this summer when I did like this collection of summer minis, and I very quickly realized that it wasn't going to be enough. And I was like, okay, what if I'm going to rush inventory? Like I want to be able to have the whole summer. So like, what do I think I'll like can go through realistically and then have more and then just go sell versus like people coming? I don't know. It's been scary, but sometimes it's like build it. Thanks. But it's kind of like sometimes build it and they'll come.
Have you seen a lot of success on the wholesale side as well?
I think the website has really been great for this because people like shops can apply via a wholesale portal and then just shop directly and not have to go through me for emails. And then I would manually do the invoices. And it was just like on the back end tough, but also kind of confusing because I'm still so small that like you don't know if I offer wholesale or whatnot. So I think it cleared things up. And I, to this day, like that's the most fun part of it is like seeing stuff in shops and like going into Penny Lynn, going into like Erica Wilson and like seeing my stuff on the wall. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And that's the best part. To be up there with other like designers is like so incredibly like awesome.
I know. It's like weird. I remember I walking into Erica Wilson for the first time and I was like, oh. And are you doing like a lot of outreach at all, or is it mainly just like inbound people who
it's all inbound so far, which is crazy. But very grateful to all of the shops that have reached out and wanted to carry the designs because I don't know, now it's like thinking of like the shops around the country that I'm like, what's the stitches in, and it's like, oh wow, like this is all over the place compared to like what I ever thought possible. So it's been such a fun thing to like look back and see.
I love that. Are you trying to go to a market ever? Is that like something you want to do? I think that was like one of our very first conversations.
It was. You're like, when I was
like, you were like,
painting myself.
Should I go to market? And I was like,
again, naive. I had no clue, but like, thank you to you because you literally from day one have answered all of my questions and
of
just
like,
looped me into like all of the back end secrets.
Yes.
I don't know. I have toyed with the idea. I'm not against it. I know that it's very hard to get in. So maybe I'll apply one day and maybe get in, but I know it's expensive and I have a very like D2C like platform right now. So I don't know. I think the best thing about it would be getting to go and meet everyone. And I think that in and of itself would be worth it, regardless of like how the sales did while I was there. I think it would just be great to meet everyone in person who I've known on the internet for this year and get to form like in-person relationships. So
yeah, that is like definitely the best part about market is like meeting the other designers and like meeting some store owners. Like it's really fun. It's definitely, I feel like, an experience everyone should experience once and like figure out if it's for them, because some people are like, oh my god, like market is like the best thing that's ever happened to me. And then somebody like us where I'm like, it was great, but like we can do what we do there at home, like from the comfort and the cost savings of
Who knows. I don't know. I definitely want to go once if I'm ever accepted. I feel like it'd be great.
Yeah, I feel like spring is a little bit easier to get into because I think it's a little bit bigger than the fall one. Good. But I think those deadlines are like coming around the corner if you want to.
I got
to
get
anybody
on
who wants, yeah, I know. Anyone who wants to look into it. Okay, well, we've been talking for an hour. Thank you so much for like letting me borrow your time for this. But I would love to just kind of wrap up and talk about your new office, like what your plans are for that. And like any sneak peek of like what's coming next or what's the stitch? Like, are we like doing New York City stuff? Are we doing like events? Are we doing pop-ups? Like, what is new products, new launches, new office, like everything? Tell us the future.
Yes. It's been great. This office space, I feel like, has really unlocked a lot of potential of like what we could do with it. So I am hiring like my first part-time helper, which is going to be awesome. Like, it's been great getting to meet people who are interested in it. But they'll help me pack and like do all of the things around the office and kind of run the business while hopefully I'll get to think more like big picture about everything and not be as in the weeds as often. But again, it's good to be in the weeds because then you know like the day to day of what's going on. But for 2026, I really want to do events in the office, whether or not that's like a weekly like sip and stitch, like low stakes, casual, come as you are, like just hang out and like have like wine and cheese and talk. And then also some events with brands. Like I would love to do collaborations with people. I feel like Needlepoint and what Penny Lynn does so well, licensing collaborations with other companies. Needlepoint is such a fun like medium for that of like getting to make a canvas or something. So I would love to explore that. But I really want to offer threads. That's my goal for 2026.
Yes.
No, I've been holding off because I know it adds like a lot of like complexity on like the inventory side. But
it's a beast.
It's a beast. And like I tried to substitute for that by giving like thread recommendations on the site. But like I want everyone to be able to like just one stop shop. Like if you want one of my projects, you could also get some thread to go with it. So I don't know, just trying to make the customer experience more seamless and I don't know, just some fun, like little events along the way and meeting people. Yeah. So that's kind of the goal. Yeah. We'll see where 2026 takes us. And paid ads. Okay. That'll be a good one, too.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Threads is like the biggest beast. And it's like, it's so necessary, but it's so annoying because you're like
inferred.
Yeah. You're dealing with like thousands of SKUs and it's like, you know, managing inventory and like, you know, you might be sitting on a pack of orange for 5 years, but you can't ever get enough white. Like when you say like think about what you think you can do and triple it. Like I would say like quadruple it for white
10 times
threads. Like, yeah, literally. It's just insane. And it's like, obviously like all the thread companies are getting backed up because everybody needs thread because that's how you need a point. And it's just, it's just like so much. So I wish you all the best with that.
Thank you.
And I remember too, like when I started, I like, there were thread lines that like would not sell to me because I wasn't a store. So when we talk about like the differences of now versus then, I don't know if like people have gotten more relaxed about it, but there were people that I had to like, I had to show them my lease. I had to like show them our open hours, like, cause they would not sell to me when I like worked out of my house. So you want to talk about naivete, just be careful. There's some thread lines, wonderful. Some thread lines, very strict. Because it's like they almost like have like, they almost have like pressure, I think, from stores being like, you can't sell to people who like sell online because it like ruins their experience.
Probably ruins like their supply chain. Yeah. That's interesting. I with like the beginner kits we just did, I used Tilly Thomas and like Pepper Pot and they're so great. Like love and Milan. I love stitching with Milan. So Milan and Pepper Pot are like my go-tos right now.
Yes. They are definitely like the most friendly, most helpful thread line out there. So
they're great.
And they have everything you need. So you might not even need to go too far. But that's so exciting. Okay. Well, where can people find you? Instagram, social, website. Give us all of the lowdown.
My Instagram is at what's the stitch NDLPT. And then the TikTok is at, I think it's at what's_the_stitch. And I need to make those consistent at some point. And then you can find us online at whatsthestitch.com. and on Penny Lane.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for hopping on.
Thank you.
And yeah, be sure to check out Emma What's the Stitch and check out her cute little minis. And we're so excited to see like what comes next. So thank you again, Emma.
And thank you so much for having me. This is like on it. When you texted me this morning, I was like, oh my God, guys. Like, I'm there. but truly, thank you so much. This has been the best time chatting with you.
Of course.